Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! What the fuck is up, man?
Not shit. How you doing, Pete?
Pretty good. I'm being kind of silly today.
Yeah.
I've been kind of silly last couple days,
dude. Got a story about that for later, though, right?
I do. It involves your brother.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
It's a fresh mayhem story.
It is. Fresh off the brutal presses, so that should be good. And hopefully he's listening, so
he'll
be waiting with bated breath to hear me tell the story. But we are here doing episode 46, man. We just keep inching fucking closer to the big 50, man.
50 is coming up real fucking soon, man. It's going to be pretty fun.
It is. It's going to be really cool. We'll talk a little bit more about that later because we had the boys from Big Bad Hogs Barbecue in here doing an interview and hanging out, and it was a good time. So we'll talk a little.
And they're fucking great friends, dude.
Totally. We also... you know, we're going to be talking a little Windy City murder, a little Chicago shit going down. So that should be fun for this episode. Definitely a good one, I think, in store for everybody. So now episode 45 was great with Joey in here, Cashman.
Okay, Cashman in here fucking talking about some mad gasser.
That was fucking awesome, dude.
Such a good one, dude.
It was a good one.
Hanging out with him, chilling, dude.
Yeah, no, he was fun having him in here, and... he definitely adds a nuance to it when we get him in here.
Every time, dude. It's always.
Because he's good on the mic and funny, and so we all had a good time. And it shows when you listen, and we're genuinely in here, like, laughing. We're not, like, doing this shit, you know, on cue. There's no laugh track in here except us fucking being idiots. So it's fun having another idiot in here, right?
Yeah, dude.
Right. So that was awesome. And then, of course, we had our boy CK talking some Overkill. He was going fucking nuts on the Overkill, loving it, spreading his fucking metal knowledge. Now, this week, like we said, to go into Chicago, but we're doing one I think a lot of people might not know about, you know.
And it's weird because he's been locked up a long fucking time.
Yeah. The longest serving inmate in the state of Illinois, apparently, when he died, he was. I don't know if he still is today.
Somebody passed him since then, but yeah.
Yeah, the lipstick killer is what they called him, but his real name, of course, William Hirons. A lot of people probably don't know about him, so I think we're going to educate some people on some true crime.
Yeah, and he went in young, so it's legit.
He did. Now, he's been on the list almost since the beginning because I've known about his story, and the thing that attracted me to wanting to learn about him was the message on the wall that he wrote, or whoever wrote, in lipstick on the wall.
Right. The message is pretty eerie, dude.
It is very eerie, and that's what kind of drew me in, is like, wow, that's crazy. And actually, when I started working on the This Side Toward Enemy story with Nolan Weeks, the original incarnation of Nolan Weeks before he was Enoch in the Enoch Strange book, he wrote on the walls, and that's where I kind of got that idea from.
Right.
And then also with Nolan being possessed by 12 different killers, they wrote in different handwriting, and that's kind of the slant I took it.
That's fucking cool, dude.
And that's why the cops thought it was multiple people, because the handwritings were all, and even the writing itself, like some look like a third grader wrote it. And then there was like a doctor as one of the people.
Good hand,
so he was very smart. Yeah.
Sucks, dude.
But it was intelligently written as compared to the one kid that was slow.
Right.
So there was all these different people. And so that's what made the cops think it was a group or a gang. Anyway, but that's what gave me the idea, was Hirons and his lipstick scrawling on the wall. So, and whether it was Hirons or not, it's another story, which we'll get to. But this is from 1945, 1946. Yeah, so a lot of people.
Right after World War II ended,
right.
Like literally right after. So.
Right, right. And, you know, there are many people that believe he's not guilty. And you guys can make up your mind, you know, like we always say, you know, take a listen and
right, give you some details on it and yeah, make up your mind.
Yeah, if you think, you know, you want to learn more about it, then go right ahead and see what you think. But personally, I think this is definitely up there in the potential police brutality slash false confession
yeah, it's,
stories that we've gone through a few of these. Now, Avery is one, and we're actually doing an entire podcast coming up on false confessions. So
fuck yeah.
The subject really interests me because I would have never thought that somebody could say that I killed that I somebody.
And knowing they didn't do it.
Right.
But if it gets into your head that much.
Why would you, you know, like to me, that just seems unbelievable. And that's what they say. A lot of juries have a hard time getting past that because of the same, for that same reason. Because most people would think, oh, well, obviously you did it. If you said you did it. Right.
You fucking 100% did it. Then we got your confession.
Right. Right.
Meanwhile, somebody else could still be out there doing some shit.
For sure.
Fucking killing people.
Big time. Big time. So, yeah. So, we've done this before. And so, we're definitely going to dig into it murder, metal, mayhem style tonight for you guys. We got CK calling tonight, talking to Metal Church.
Metal Church.
Going old school. He's been jamming it again, he said, all day. So, He is one of the most pure metalheads I know because he really fucking jams his shit.
Definitely got a lot of knowledge about different styles of bands when he did freaking right. Black Dahlia Murder. I was like, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking A, dude.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, and then he did like Galactic Cowboys or something. It's like he's all over the place.
Different genres of metal everywhere.
Yeah, Thin Lizzy. He wants to do one on Thin Lizzy, actually.
Fucking A.
And Joe DiBiase, or DeBias, excuse me, I've pronounced it wrong all these years. Joe DeBias, the original bass player for Fate's Warning, is a friend of me and CK, and he's agreed to come on and Skype and talk about Thin Lizzy because he's like obsessed with Thin Lizzy.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, yeah. So Joe's going to do that. I'm actually going to see Joe here in a couple weeks because he's doing three of the dates with Fate's Warning with the Queensryche show, and one of them is the Chicago show. So that's going to be really cool.
That's fucking cool as fuck, man.
Yeah, Joe is a cool dude. So anyway, when we do the Thin Lizzy segment with CK, and I don't know, we haven't planned this yet, but we will. Joe's going to be, we'll do a four-way Skype conversation, which would be fun.
That'd be fucking cool.
So yeah, it'd be badass. So that should be good. We've got another killer cage match coming up this week. We got two madmen going at it, in a fight to the death. So we got a very interesting pair this time.
A real interesting pair. I think I'm already biased on it though.
Are you? Yeah. I'm trying to keep an open mind because it's going to be fucking crazy with the objects, especially.
Definitely.
One of the objects is fucking insane. So thanks to Janice Kunkel, Carly Kottner for providing the random numbers. You girls picked some good ones this time. We've got the gangster and bootlegger himself, Al Capone.
Good old Al fucking gonna get in the cage with the Green River Killer.
The Green River Killer himself.
Gary Ridgway himself.
Oh, Gary Ridgway. So that should be pretty funny. Those two going at it because Gary Ridgway is kind of a dorky, kind of meek.
Yeah.
But Capone, you know, is a big dude, but, you know, he had everybody else doing shit for him. So that should be an interesting one.
It's funny, though, because I know somebody that's related to Gary Ridgway. So.
I remember you saying that. I'd like to put him on the list, and that would be cool to talk about that because I always think it's
related to Gary Ridgway,
cool
fuck yeah.
to have a. You know, a tie with one with of us what, to something.
Dude, how, yeah, like so Cashman cool. did with the guesser. Like he right. had, he lived there, not during the time, obviously. But
right. But yeah, being from Mattoon, I think that is cool. And the objects we'll tell you in the Mayhem segment because they're funny. And so that'll be a match in Mayhem that we'll do with the Green River Killer and Al Capone. That should be pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So, also, we'd like to thank, we got a new sponsor tonight.
Yes, we do. We do have a new sponsor.
Who is the sponsor? It's kind of a last-minute thing here.
It's Dr. Gein's Vagina Maintenance. They are a great sponsor. Wow. They help out with everybody. The ladies love them.
Okay, and they've got like a Mother's Day thing, don't they? Isn't that what the commercial?
Yeah, it's a Pussy Bee New Basket. You can get that for Mother's Day.
Oh, wow.
So,
That's nice.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fun time. Wow. If you need anything for your lady, just check out Dr. Gein's Vagina Maintenance. Look it up online.com. Get it.
Now, I just got a question, though, about the Pussy Be New thing. Like, would it be offensive? I mean, like, it's like if you give somebody that, I mean, are you insinuating that they stink? Or is it just, I love you, and I don't want you to stink?
It depends.
So here, it's like a preventative maintenance thing. You know?
It depends. Does she have her shoes on or off? Is it your feet? Is it your pussy? I don't know, dude.
Oh, wow. See, I'm like, you know, you give somebody like deodorant, you know, like for a present. You would think like, wow, I must stink if you're giving me deodorant. So I would think it would be the same right? thing.
Yeah, I think it'd be the same thing.
I don't know. But anyway, but he's selling them, and he's got that Pussy Be New basket you can get for your mom, your grandma, your girlfriend, wife, whatever. Somebody at work, maybe. So like usual, sounds like we've got a lot on our plate tonight, and I'm in a fucking stupid-ass mood, so this should be pretty funny.
Fuck yeah, let's have a good fucking time.
Sounds like we got some fucked-up messages on the wall in lipstick to read, warning us about some dead women in Chicago. So fucking SOD, man. Stormtroopers of Death.
Goddamn, that's that fucking old school like 80s skater music right
there,
yeah. Dude. Fuck
big
yeah,
time.
Getting it, dude.
Yeah, kill yourself. That's good stuff. And fucking MOD is playing the FTA show.
Yes,
so
they
that's
are.
Fucking badass,
can't wait
man.
To see that.
Totally fucking pumped. All right, well, we're talking convicted murderer William Hirons here in the murder segment, known in the media as the lipstick killer because of a strange message scrawled on the wall in one of the crime scenes.
Yeah, obviously in lipstick.
Yeah, exactly. And he's believed to have murdered two women and a very young girl in late 1945 into 1946 in Chicago. So fucking pretty gruesome shit, dude. I mean,
yeah, especially the way they found the fucking little girl. She was what, 9, I think.
Yeah, I think
the way they found her, dude, is ridiculous. Yeah,
really nasty. So that'll be an interesting part of this, I'm sure, for you guys that like the more grotesque side of things.
Very grotesque.
And the gruesome discovery of the girl's severed head and limbs in a sewer just sparked outrage. I mean, and especially that era.
Right.
The 40s, you know, people were...
The late 40s, yeah, after the war.
Yeah. People were like, tired of that shit.
You know? We don't want the violence. You need to find out who the fuck did this. That's right. What they were saying.
They were upset and really fucking passing judgment down on the cops for not getting their fucking job done. And so the question is, did they rush to judgment and arrest the wrong dude? I mean, this is a young 17-year-old fucking punk.
Yeah, not,
burglar.
Yeah.
You know.
And he's smart as fuck. He was
a smart dude, but he acted like a fool doing this shit because he claimed he didn't even sell the stuff.
He just
so
grabbed
it, more
it
like
had
a thrill,
stockpile,
you
basically,
know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it was a compulsion of his that obviously was his undoing, but...
Yeah, that's like any other thing. It's like an addiction, I guess. He addicted
yeah.
to stealing.
The rush,
kleptomaniac, man.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, do you say that a guy that's doing that is the guy killing women and then this little girl? I mean, to me, it's a stretch.
Yeah, it's a little bit of stretch, especially it after seems... you see what little bit of evidence they fucking have. So.
Right, right. And it is a case, though, filled with some controversy, shaky evidence, false confessions, and all that kind of thing, which we've mentioned. But Hirons not the typical criminal who would be thought of as a suspect for this kind of thing. And that's probably the main reason why a lot of people question it.
Right.
Because it just doesn't seem to add up. This isn't some dude that's been in and out of prison for killing or raping or stuff like
anything
that.
Anything violent at all. He had his
petty criminal.
A petty criminal. And he didn't have any violent charges.
Well, he had the weapons charge for having a gun.
Yeah.
But he didn't use it on somebody, just had it, you know. Again, you know, shouldn't have had it.
Didn't work, I guess, but still shouldn't have it.
Right, yeah. And that's part of the problem is he had some priors, so, you know, the jury would hear that kind of stuff. And at the time of his death, though, in 2012, Hirons was the longest serving Illinois inmate. 65 years, dude. That is
like his entire adult fucking life.
Right.
Like legit. Right.
I mean, 18 years old, he gets sentenced to life and he's in there.
Done.
And that's it. I mean, that's just fucking unbelievable.
I couldn't even. I mean, eventually it turns into life, though. That is your life.
I mean, and he made the best of it. We'll talk about it. I mean, he did some really positive things.
Of good fucking things, man. He was a fucking good guy.
Yeah. I was kind of bummed when I was doing the research to find out that he was dead because I thought, dude, this would be so cool if he would meet with us. Because apparently he did, like, do interviews, like, even later, you know. I saw one with him that he was older.
I watched one with him, too.
Yeah, so, I mean.
There was a lady asking him questions. Right, and shit. Yeah, right. I watched that one.
Yeah, and I think, you know, how cool would that have been that we would have got to meet him, you know? Would have been interesting.
Would have been more entertaining to watch than she was. That was fucking kind of boring.
That was very boring. That's the thing. When you research stuff like this, you come across some really tough shit to listen to or watch.
Like, God damn.
Like the Norwegian dude. It was fucking awful, man. So William Hirons, born in Chicago, 1928, to a poor house. His parents fought a lot, causing him to leave and kind of wander around. He was in the Lincolnwood area of Chicago. And it was because of the time kind of wandering, I think, that he started to get into stealing and right. Maybe just to kind of, like you said, the thrill of it, you know.
One of the things I listened to, or a couple of things I listened to, talking about his first actual robbery, because he was selling groceries for a grocer door-to-door. And they had shorted him a dollar, and he didn't want to get in trouble with his boss, so he just saw some money sitting at somebody's table or whatever, and grabbed it and took it, and he's like, oh, fuck. That was easy.
Huh.
So
interesting.
Yeah, it's fucking...
Because he was working his way through school, so, I mean, he obviously needed the money, you know.
Needed the cash.
And his parents didn't have it either, you know, so... No. It sucks, but, you know, that's sometimes people are kind of, like, forced into doing that sort of thing, maybe... Partly that, partly, like you said, the whole kleptomania thing, the thrill of it, you know.
Right.
Now, he was arrested at 13.
Yeah, for the gun you were talking about.
For the loaded gun.
13 years old walking around with a fucking pistol, dude. God damn it. I look at my boy and be like, what the fuck are you thinking? Right?
Especially loaded, too. Yeah, like, God damn, Jesus, dude. Searching his house, though, found other loaded guns and a bunch of stolen merchandise. I was kind of blown away at the shit. He had furs, cameras, radios, jewelry, suits.
Yeah, I mean, just like fucking random,
like a Macy's fucking store. It's like
maybe
crazy.
He's trying to fucking start a new fucking.
I don't know.
Goddamn store, dude.
I don't know. He was really smart, like you said. So who
William
knows?
Smart,
big time. He actually had a higher IQ than Einstein. By like 10 points.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like he was smart as a motherfucker.
Really fucking smart. And he admitted, though, to 11 burglaries and was sent to a juvenile facility for wayward boys. Sounds like somewhere maybe that they might have sent you, you know.
It sounds like a fucking emo band name.
Wayward facility boys. For wayward boys. So he went there for a few months, probably not a good time. But not long after he got out, arrested again for stealing. This time, though, oddly... And I say oddly because this is a really weird coincidence. The St. Bede Academy, which is in downstate Peru, Illinois, which is about an hour from here, north. And it's run by Benedictine monks. And the reason why it's weird is because I know the place very well.
You've worked there before, right?
I've had to go for my day job. I've had to go there a few different times. A friend of mine works there. And he was instrumental when I was starting to work on Enoch Strange because I wanted to understand the hierarchy within a school like that of who's in charge and how the clergy and the staff would work together and
all
that.
With the monk guys?
Yeah. And so he was very helpful in explaining that. And so I didn't want to get him in trouble. I didn't want to deal with any kind of legal issues with using the name of that place.
Right.
Because the story has nothing to do with anything that happened in reality.
It was just inspiration for your story.
Totally. Because if you ever go by this place, It's fucking wicked. It looks like a castle. It's fucking badass.
No fucking shit.
Oh, yeah.
I've never actually been by it.
It's really cool. It's odd. It's really cool. But anyway, I made up the fictitious place in the Chicago area where the story takes place, but it's based on the St. Bede Academy. But right. That's where they sent him. And so he was an outstanding student, and they wound up getting him into the University of Chicago. Yeah, as soon as he was released, they sent him up.
How fucking crazy is that? I mean, you're already locked up, but you're right. So fucking smart and everything, and everybody's got enough thoughts, positive thoughts about you. As soon as you're released from basically prison, kids' prison, basically.
Right.
Instantly, you're in a prestigious college.
Yeah, because like, he went back home, but it was too far to commute for where he lived. So, and his parents couldn't afford to pay for a dorm and anything.
Or their classes. So that's.
So he wound up working.
Yeah, and odd jobs here and there. And then he started robbing.
Yeah, he did various jobs. He was a theater usher in a movie theater. And then he was also a teacher's aide at the university. But he continued to break into apartments and stuff. So it was likely. You know, he was probably getting something, like you said, the cash. He claims he never sold anything, but it does seem odd. Like, what do you?
Why would you take it? Why would you take it if you're not going to steal?
Yeah,
it?
He's a smart dude, so you got to think he probably sold some of it. I don't know, but I'm guessing that it seems like that's likely. But
you would think so.
One former student remembered him saying that he was one of the most popular boys in the class. And in a ballroom dancing class they took together. Did you take ballroom dancing in school?
I actually do it to this day, sir.
Oh, wow.
That's what I did right before I got here.
Oh, shit.
Ballroom dancing class.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right before I got here.
I don't mean to make fun of you.
See? Some bitch.
Reminds me of the brutality report I used to do, which anybody that doesn't know about the brutality report, that would be a pretty funny mayhem story because that's just crazy. I did that for 10 years. Online magazine, really raunchy, like this, but written. And Skank of the Week. I mean, we did some funny shit.
Skank of the Week.
But I used to do Psycho Dance, and I took graphics of the Riverdance dancers, and I would put serial killer heads on them, like Gacy.
That's fucking hilarious.
And it was really funny because they're doing these like funny poses and shit, and it's got like Gacy's head on.
Actually, I do remember that now that you mentioned it. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
That's fucking funny.
So I remembered that just as we talked ballroom dancing. But she said all the girls wanted to dance with Hiron, so apparently he was quite the lady killer.
Oh, yeah. Well, you seen the pictures of him when he was 17? He's a sexy motherfucker.
He is. Looks like a movie star or something. He does. Yeah. I mean, he's a good-looking dude. So it's crazy he couldn't stop stealing because that was obviously his downfall. I mean, you know, he had good looks. He was a smart guy. He's going to University of Chicago at 16 fucking years old.
Yeah. I mean,
pretty much write his own ticket. It's like, why, dude, you know?
I mean, I understand he's working hard to fucking get through college, but fucking, I've known people that have done it.
Right. But don't you know how people are always thinking it's going to be somebody else. It's going to be somebody else. I think she did some robbing, didn't she? Probably. I did see some later interviews with Hirons. He said that that's what he regretted most was doing that because obviously
that's what got him
that
caught
set
up.
Him up to exactly. be pinned, this thing pinned on him. And, of course, wasted his whole fucking life in prison. But he did make the best of it.
He didn't waste it, per se.
I mean, he did a lot of good things. But think of what he could have done, right? If he
was out free doing,
Right. So June 1945, a 43-year-old woman, Josephine Ross, was found dead in her Chicago apartment. She had been repeatedly stabbed, and oddly, her head was wrapped in a dress, which I thought was kind of weird.
I thought it was a dress that she had on. They just pulled it up and wrapped it around her head.
That may be what it was.
I think that's what it was. And then, cleaned the body and tried to fucking clean the
With tape. Is that the one?
Yeah, put the tape on the wounds to freaking. Isn't that the one?
I think so, yeah. And he washed her and he was really trying to get, I'm assuming, evidence off.
Yeah, took tape and tried to seal the wound. Dude, how fucked up is that? It's like, I'm sorry
you.
I did that. Was this tape going to fix this?
Will this fix your owie?
I'm sorry.
You want me to kiss it? Yeah, I mean, what the fuck? The police presume that it was a whole that she surprised an intruder, struggled with him, pulling out several dark hairs that were in her hands upon investigation. So she got a hold of him at some point.
Defensive shit.
Yeah. No valuables, though, taken from the apartment, which is weird.
And that's an odd thing. Just like the dude that's from why the train, I don't man, think no valuables taken.
Right, but I don't
but think... But this is a different story. But,
of course, yeah, but I don't. That's weird. Why I don't think Hirons would have done it, because he would have took the shit.
Yeah, because he was a known burglar.
Right. Now, her fiancé, of course, would be number one suspect. He was at apparently a legit alibi, and they said all the other exes, anybody they checked out... was good. So they had no suspects. Now, there was later a report of a dark-complected man seen in the lobby of the building, but that was all they had to go on, and nothing really
imagine
came of that.
Imagine that back in the fucking 40s, right. Dark-complected.
Yeah, exactly. Racist motherfucker. No, I don't know. But yeah, that's, you know, they never panned out. Nothing came
of that. Nothing came of that ever.
Now, December 1945, so just a few months later, Frances Brown, a divorced woman, was found with a knife lodged in her neck and a bullet in her head. So, dude, again, these serial killers.
Fucking brutal.
It dude. Is.
Like, you, I just left the knife in your fucking right. neck.
Didn't even pull it out. Just said, fuck care. It. Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty fucking savage.
Maybe it got stuck in her larynx and he couldn't get it out. So he's like, ah, fuck. God damn it.
Now I got to go get another knife. I got to go back to Sears. Yeah.
Right. It was like fucking Ricky Bobby when he stabbed himself in the fucking leg right. and he's trying to pry it out with the damn fucking other knife.
She had been savagely stabbed, and police believed that she, like the other victim, had likely surprised a robber or robbery, something like that.
Yeah, going somebody on. In the house.
Once again, no valuables taken. It was at this crime scene, though, that they would discover the strange wall marks on the wall.
And it's fucking lipstick. Freaky, dude.
It is freaky. So it says, "For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself."
And lipstick on the wall, dude. That's like all big, up. Dude. If you see the picture of it, dude, yeah. like written on there. Like,
yeah, if you Google William Hirons, you'll see the lipstick thing on the wall. It's pretty fucked up looking.
Like, goddamn.
It's almost like
how many
tins
of lipstick did you use?
I know.
Daughter uses one every time she a whole tube every time she wants to
oh
get
my God.
Put makeup on. I'm like,
Jesus,
you're nine. Stop.
So this is obviously where the lipstick killer name comes from. Police also found a bloody partial fingerprint on a door jamb, and a neighbor said he heard a gunshot at 4 a.m., and the clerk in the lobby said he saw a man, he's claiming about 35 to 40 years old, nervously get off the elevator, but then walk right to the door with kind of his head down, and the body was washed again to remove any physical clues with this one. So,
like,
very
what
weird.
Goes through your head when you leave the knife in the neck, but you wash?
Well,
the
I was just gonna say
body,
that. Like,
dude.
Why would you do that?
Like, like, hold on, I'm gonna leave that
you
knife.
You gotta like
right
clean there. Around the knife. Yeah. Like,
what if you cut your
more,
own hand cleaning would, around her neck, dude?
Would that be a
fuck.
Pain in the ass? I mean,
like,
just
that
pull the fucking
don't
knife
make no out. Damn sense.
I don't know. I don't know. Unless he left it out and did his cleaning and then did it again. I don't know.
Well, it's only one stab one, so maybe he true. Shot her and then cleaned her. And he's like, you know what? Just for good measure.
Maybe.
Fuck it, dude. I don't
maybe.
Care.
Hard telling with this motherfucker. So, yeah, it's very strange. Now, strangely, though, I saw this. 4 days later, the police believed that the killer was a woman.
I did. Yeah, I did hear that.
But I saw nothing that explained, like, why. Or it wasn't like right. with the gas or where they saw the women's footprints.
No, I just
this
thought
was
it
just,
was a lady. But nothing ever came of it.
Right. And nothing like, was explained was, as to why. Like, did somebody see a woman? You know, what was up?
Yeah, and it never, nothing ever, you heard about it. It was like, it might have been a female.
Right.
And then it's like, oh.
Yeah.
I thought I heard that, but maybe right. not.
Yeah. So early in January 1946, so just a month later, this is the really gruesome one, a six-year-old. So 6-year-old Suzanne Degnan was found missing from her first bedroom or first floor bedroom in a Edgewater, which another Chicago suburb. Police discovered a ladder outside the window with a ransom note.
And the ladder was stolen itself, honestly.
It was. And the letter was there, and it said to get $20,000 ready
don't
in
notify,
fives and tens.
Yeah, don't notify the FBI. Don't notify the police.
Right.
And didn't it say, like, burn this or some shit?
Yeah, there was something about that. He was just kind of ominous. Of course, they're freaked out. 20 G's is a lot of money now. Think about back
then.
Yeah,
imagine 1946,
probably at least twice,
dude,
that, maybe 50,000. He also warned the family, you know, like you said, not to go to the cops or anything, which is pretty standard with that kind of thing. But,
well, yeah, if you're asking for a ransom, you're just straight up going to be like, don't go to the cops. I'm going to kill your kid.
Right. Yeah, it's fucked up. I mean, it's got to be scary. I can't imagine. Now, at the time, this is kind of interesting. There was a meatpacker strike in Chicago.
No more gay porn in Chicago. God damn it. My favorite kind.
The meatpackers.
That's why I think about Green Bay. So.
Yeah. Well, it's, I'll tell this. I got a good one about that. Suzanne's father had a job in a government agency that would have been a possible target for the union. So supposedly they had like armed guards and like a security detail. But my question is, where the fuck were they?
Hold on. At their house?
I didn't see that. It didn't say that it was at the house. It just said that he had security. So maybe when he went places, I don't know. It didn't specify.
Like traveling and shit.
It didn't specify because there was another executive at that same agency that was beheaded. Like, so they were like freaked out.
See that. What the fuck?
Yeah, they were freaked out. That's why they got him the security. But I'm thinking, like, where the why weren't they at the house?
Yeah, because you know, if somebody's coming for you, they're coming for your fucking family, too. If they're coming to do that, cut your fucking head off. They're going to be like, oh, their family's free. Let's fucking do the worst thing we can to them.
Right. Yeah.
What?
It's fucked up. So, maybe it was an inside job. And if being in Chicago, who the fuck knows, right? I mean, it's, kind of rampant with all sorts of corruption and
Chicago
bullshit.
Is fucking, they should cut everything north of Interstate 80 off and make it its own state.
Right. Well, that's what everybody said. Since I've lived out here, that's what I've heard. Right?
Make it its own goddamn state.
Yeah, big time. So that's an interesting twist on it. Now, an anonymous tip led the police to find Suzanne's head in a sewer only a block from the house.
Somebody had to
know. That's fucked up. Well,
it's an anonymous tip. Hey, hey, you're trying to find this little girl. Why don't you go look in the sewer? No, I'm not going to tell you my name.
Right.
And then they find her whole body, but not in one piece.
Yeah, they found like a limb and this, like a catch basin and then a storm sewer and
all kinds of
just random.
It was like.
And they didn't even find all of it. They wound up finding more later.
Right.
We'll talk about that. But there's blood found in the drains of the basement laundry room of a nearby apartment building. But of course, this would have been before. They could have tested for, they didn't limited knowledge of that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they could 40s. Get blood types, but just because it's a type back then, they didn't know that you could specify it. DNA wasn't like that.
Wasn't even a thing, of course. So, there wasn't much they could do there. Now, a doctor who was in the was one of the coroner's experts, apparently, said that the body of the little girl was cut expertly by someone that was either a surgeon or butcher, further pointing the link to that meat cutters union. You know, you got a whole fucking union full of dudes that are good with fucking knives, kind of Catherine Knight style shit.
Catherine Knight, yeah, and Black Dahlia.
But, totally.
Well, Catherine Knight, though, meat cutter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
She was
damn
fucking
it.
Brutal, man. The knives over the bed. That's got to be. I mean,
how do you sleep with
a I'm out of like there. That? I'm out of there.
Dude.
If the chick's fucking putting a fucking set of knives up on the wall, yeah, I don't fucking
what if we're
think
banging
so.
And one falls and stabs me in the back, just like you just did, bitch?
Yeah, that's creepy as fuck. So that's what this expert is saying, that this is somebody that knows how to cut, whether it be a surgeon or a butcher, but somebody that's able to do that because this was done just like an expert would. And so, that's what he said. And so Eyewitnesses claim that they saw another suspicious man and a woman at the time was carrying like packages.
Yeah, there was a dude waiting in the car and the girl lady came out carrying something.
Yeah, so again, who knows? But these are just sightings. Nothing really pans out with any of it, you know? Now, I've seen that they arrested a 65-year-old janitor in the apartment next door. He was eventually released because they didn't think he could physically have done it, you know?
Didn't have the strength.
He was just older and he couldn't.
He's mopping floors. He ain't lifting bodies.
Right. So they wound up letting him go. And also, he spoke very little English. And so they thought that he wouldn't have been able to write that message as clear as it was on the wall in English if he can't hardly say or speak the language. So
that makes sense.
Now, this guy, again, going to the way Chicago operates, he accused the police of beating him. And he was eventually awarded a bunch of money from the city of Chicago. So,
well, good for him.
Yeah, fuck that. You know, that's fucking ridiculous. So another man arrested, a former Marine who left town soon after the Degnan murder. Police form a nationwide manhunt for this motherfucker, and they find him in Ohio. So they were going to the fucking ends of the earth to find these fucking people. They checked out his alibi, gave him a polygraph, and they cleared
polygraph
him.
And like, oh, we spent all this fucking money to go chase you.
And you weren't
You weren't even there.
Now, they also, a couple of teenagers.
I guess they're putting in work to get
well, them. Well, they are. 370 suspects.
Yeah, that was
just that's
shit
a lot
ton
of fucking
they
work,
did a
man.
Bunch of other fingerprints and shit, too. There's like thousands of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ridiculous amount.
Yeah, I mean, they had all sorts of people trying to figure this out. Now, these teenagers, they were suspected. I don't even remember why, but then their story, it all fell apart. So the police are completely unable to figure this out. The fucking three murders, you know, they didn't think they were connected. Each victim is killed in a totally different way. I mean, we know from just doing this, and neither of us obviously are experts in this.
Definitely not experts. We're just talking our shit.
Right. But I mean, it always seems like they kill, you know, using the same. Right.
Most of them.
Right. And they might differ slightly, but when you're going from a gun to a knife to chopping up a little girl and putting her in the sewer, those are all over the place. Those are not, to me, linked together. I don't even know if the first two are linked together. But
I mean, the way the body was clean and everything.
Yeah, the cleaning and then the whole not taking anything. I guess I'll go there with that.
Yeah.
But I don't see where the six-year-old girl ties in with that at all.
I have no idea how this fucking...
And I certainly don't think a fucking two-bit fucking burglar is going to be doing some shit like this.
I'm like literally a good-natured person. You just rob people.
Right, right. So... You know, the pressure is just getting overwhelming. As I mentioned, 370 suspects were questioned and eventually cleared. So they were fucking trying. Now, here's the one that I found very interesting. Richard Russell Thomas was a nurse from Chicago who had abruptly left town right after the Degnan murder and went to Phoenix.
Right.
Very suspicious. He was actually in jail there for molesting one of his own fucking daughters.
Well, he's a piece of shit already. So
right.
You know he's capable of doing
and he's got a thing with little girls if he's doing that. So that, to me, is a...
Fuck him.
Is definitely some
is
sort
dead?
Of tie. I would think so. so they also, their experts, believe that his handwriting was similar to the message left in lipstick. And... He fucking confessed.
Without any coercion.
He just fucking, hey, I did this.
Like, hey, you know that guy you got over there in Illinois? It was me.
Yeah. Now, the police are intrigued, of course, by this, you know, new suspect that they've got. A college student who was recently noted in the newspapers for fleeing from a robbery in the area, brandishing a loaded gun at the police. And that student, of course, William Hirons.
William Hirons, yes.
So you got this guy with a medical background in prison already for being a piece of shit and hurting his kids. So now...
And confesses
said
that he did it.
That he did this. He was living there at the time. and they fucking abruptly abandon ship and go pin it on this fucking burglar.
This guy
makes no sense.
No, makes no sense.
It's fucking ridiculous. So June,
they just were trying to find. Just get somebody.
Right. But, I mean, you had him. I mean, he admitted it. I don't understand why they didn't just fucking do that. You know, I mean.
The whole gun thing with Hirons, too, dude. Like, right. I don't know what to believe on it. He says one thing, they say another thing.
It is a he said, she said thing big time with that. So, June 46, a 17-year-old Hirons was arrested after a botched robbery. And various accounts say he only pointed the gun at the police. And like you said.
Yeah,
that. Other people say he fired it,
and it
he
didn't claims go well, it never and it was went jammed. Off.
I heard something. I think it was an interview with him where he said he threw the gun at the cop, which makes
see,
no
I
sense.
I didn't see that. I was,
that's
like,
pretty
oh,
fucking
fuck.
Stupid.
I mean, I guess if he tried to fire and it didn't fucking
guess,
go
yeah,
off, just
fuck
well,
it.
Fuck. Maybe I hit him in the head or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of
if
funny.
You got like a big old 357. You chuck it at somebody's face, they're fucking. God damn, that's going to hurt.
It's going to hurt. He claims, though, that that's what happened. And then he threw the gun at him, and then they struggled on the floor.
And this motherfucker,
this off-duty fucking cop comes in with not one.
But three.
Not two, but three. And what were they?
They're the fucking goddamn those clay fucking planter pots, dude. The terracotta pots, dude.
Yeah.
Three of them. And he just like. Bashes all three of them on his head, dude. Because, like we were talking about, the goddamn pictures of him when they're bringing him in,
it's hilarious. He's dude, all fucked up.
But how intense are you into that fight when you're just like
three of those three clay pots? Fucking bam.
I'm kind of were they fucking full of dirt too,
I don't
though?
Because
what if they were full of
could've
dirt?
Killed him. I mean, Jesus. One of them would fucking kill you. Three of them. Like, what the fuck? So he gets fucking donked on the head three times with clay flower pots, and he's all fucked up. If you Google it, I'm telling you, you'll see all
you
this
see
shit.
Dude, the picture is
it's
fucking
pretty
classic.
Funny. Yeah, he's got some gnarly fucking pictures. He said he fought to avoid arrest because he heard how others had told him that the police were corrupt, and he didn't trust them.
Right.
And, you know, with everything that we've been talking about, you can't say you blame the guy.
Like I said last week with my situation with the Chicago PD, but.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we know that, like we've said before, you know, we're certainly not saying all cops are bad.
No, not all cops are bad. Some are fucking awesome.
Yeah. And
some are
there's some real fucking douchebags, though, and those are the ones that give them, you know, a bad name. So the police take them to Bridewell Hospital, which sounds pretty ominous, connected to the Cook County Jail. Where Hiron said things started getting violent. He was in and out of consciousness, questioned around the clock for six straight fucking days.
Yeah, and he couldn't see his lawyer while they were for six
or his
days.
Parents.
Yeah, he couldn't see anybody, and they had him under just a light, just like going at him.
And he said they only gave him enough food and water to keep him alive. That was it.
I mean,
so, it's fucked up.
Fucking stupid, man.
And as a minor, this just seems crazy. But it's not like we haven't heard this before. Now, this would have been before the Miranda rights, which was 1966.
Yeah, totally before the Miranda rights, yeah.
So this type of thing, unfortunately, was commonly done. But as we discussed with Brandon Dassey when we did the Making a Murderer segment at the end of the year last year, he was also questioned by without a lawyer or his parents.
Just him. And
a very leading interview, and that was really bad.
Very violent leading interview.
Yeah, and so that's what I think was going on here. Now, they go even further, though. They got two psychiatrists giving him the sodium pentothal, which is, of course, the truth serum.
Yeah.
And they did this without a warrant or his parents' permission, and they gave him a fucking spinal tap.
I was going to say, they gave him a fucking spinal tap.
What
like,
the fuck?
With, I guess, no anesthesia or anything. They
oh
just,
my
like,
God.
Went to town, said he had, like, a headache the rest for, like, another 6 weeks or what?
Oh,
was
yeah, he
weeks?
Did say it was a
like,
period
he was,
of time.
He was in so much pain, like, my head fucking hurt. Could you, yeah. I couldn't even imagine getting a spinal tap, let alone with one without no anesthesia,
right.
Man.
And then having a headache for a couple months. Yeah, that's fucked up. Now, they claim that while he was under all these fucking drugs, he blamed an alter ego, George Merman.
Merman.
That might have committed the murders.
Yeah, it's kind of split personality thing, sort of. That's almost what they kind of said.
Yeah, like a Jekyll and Hyde type thing.
Exactly that, yeah.
Now, the media made the stretch that Merman was really Murder Man, which is kind of a cool name.
It is kind of a cool name.
And began a groundswell of people thinking Hirons was guilty.
But yeah, he doesn't. He, like, when he woke up from the sodium pentothal, which I don't know. I've never done it.
Me either.
But I don't know anybody who has either.
Right.
But do you lose your memory or you just say things?
Yeah, see, I don't know. Because
like he said when he woke up that he didn't remember hardly anything he said. So I don't know how sodium pentothal works like that. I'm actually going to look that up now and see how it works.
Right, right.
Because I might want to get some stories from myself.
Now, what I thought was interesting, though, having just watched The Innocent Man on Netflix, it's very good if you haven't seen it. John Grisham wrote a book called The Innocent Man, which is really good. And the show is based on that. And he's on the show as well. But the cops use a suspect's dream as a substitute for an actual confession.
The fucking Freddy Krueger?
They do it twice to two different people. Yeah, it's fucked up. It's well worth watching. Freddy Krueger? Totally. Totally. Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous. Now, as for the smudged, partial, bloody fingerprint, at first the police said it was not Hirons, but then 12 days later changed their mind and said it was his.
That was, so, it was that, the dude that was in charge of the FBI, he was a president. What was his, which president fucking was it?
Oh, Hoover?
Hoover, yeah. It was Hoover in charge of the FBI. That's fucking who came back with that shit.
Then that doesn't surprise me. So, yeah, that was very, very suspicious because, you know, people say that this would have been difficult to be that decisive about it because of the condition of the print. So who knows? Once again, though, without a warrant, police searched his residence there at the dorm, found a scrapbook from a World War II vet that lived near Degnan's, which apparently this was part of their, you know, things that were stolen.
Right.
And that put him somewhat close to the Degnan apartment. But
doesn't mean he was there.
No. I mean, there's a lot of very circumstantial type things here.
He was close to it. Well, I was close
to
it.
So do a lot of people walked by there, I'm sure, you know. Right.
I was close to the 7-Eleven when that dude got shot, but I wasn't there.
Well, right, right. So, also found was a medical kit, but police thought the instruments in the kit were too small to do what was done to the victim. So
it was probably his hobby kit, man.
Probably. Yeah, they're like looking at this little knife, like a scalpel, and this fucking
right,
dude's
hacking
off limbs.
I'm
going to
hack his head off, dude. Yeah. Fuck.
Might take you a couple weeks.
He's probably fucking just practicing on like fucking fetuses and shit.
Probably. They also found a gun, again him with the fucking guns, in the room, claimed that it was linked to another crime where a bullet was fired through a window. There was a book they found in his room that was supposedly about deviant sexual behavior.
That, like fucking like really weird shit. Like, well, this makes him guilty too.
Right.
Just because people have their fetishes don't mean they fucking kill.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. So they used to paint, or they used that to paint Hirons as like this sex crazed maniac.
And that's the only way he could fucking get his, kind of like, God damn it.
BTK,
like
dressing up like a woman and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Now this would be like seeing someone's Pornhub history and using it against them. So if that happened,
I'm fucked.
A whole bunch of people would be locked up. Yeah, that's just fucked up. The newspapers were relentless, though, claiming Hirons was like a Jekyll and Hyde, was printed and said in the news, I saw this 157 times in 10 days. That's fucking nuts.
Name was in the paper 157 times in 10 days.
Yeah, saying that he confessed, that he was the one. He was the one. He was the
one. Damn, I didn't see that either. That's fucked, dude.
That's ridiculous. Hirons later said that he didn't confess, so that he claims that that never even happened, and his lawyer said the same thing. Hirons said that from the beginning he had nothing to do with any of the murders, And the only thing he was guilty of was stealing and having the gun.
Like, I rob shit, and yeah, sorry, I had this illegal, which honestly is a felony in itself.
Right.
But
of course. And he claimed he never sold any of these goods, which seems to be a stretch. Another thing I found that was interesting was on his deathbed, he was asked by somebody, did you do it? You know, did you do it? You know, you're ready to fucking check out.
Just let us know.
And he said, no, I did not. I had nothing to do with any of that. I stand by what I've said from the beginning. When I was 18 fucking years old, I didn't do this.
Took it to death.
So for what that's worth, I think that's an interesting point to make. One eyewitness said he saw a man 35 to 40 year old. So that's like that other witness that saw that.
Right.
Leaving the scene, unable to identify Hirons in a lineup, but then later in a hearing,
he came back and he said
it was Hirons.
No, they asked, do you see the guy? And he pointed right at, oh shit. God damn it. He pointed right at him.
Oh, wow.
Like, I seen that. Like, the guy was like, what you said, he fucking couldn't identify him in the lineup, but in the courtroom, they said, do you see the man that you witnessed that night? And he pointed right at Hirons, like, it's like, it's that guy. Make sure you point at him.
Right, right. Yeah, very suspicious. Now, apparently, his lawyers even thought he was guilty or could have been guilty and presumed the young man, you know, or pressured the young man to take a plea to avoid the death penalty.
Yeah, because they were pushing him by the fucking electric chair. You're going to be in there soon, boy.
Yeah, and I watched an interview with him in his later life. And he was saying how that he confessed to save his own life because he knew with the media attention, there was no way he was getting a fair trial. There's no way.
And he knew that once he got sentenced, he was going to get the death penalty. So he just didn't want to fucking die. So he
said, if I would have fought it, I'd be dead.
Right.
He goes, I thought as long as I was alive, I could still speak my case and maybe eventually get out of this.
Right.
Because I know I didn't do it. So again, you know, for what that's worth, you know, I think it's interesting, you know. So Hirons is sentenced to 3 life terms. He's not, or he's able to get paroled, but of course he never does.
Right. And never mind. Go ahead.
The same day he confessed.
Something different.
The same day he confessed and took that plea bargain, tried to hang himself in his cell, but was discovered before he died.
Yeah,
so
he took like
him.
His bed sheet and threw it over and tried to hang.
Yeah,
it's like shift change or some shit like that.
Right, right. Now, during his time behind bars, as we mentioned, he was very, made good use of the time. First inmate in Illinois to graduate college behind bars, so that's pretty crazy.
Right. And then he did, like you said, a lot of other work doing it.
Yeah, he took a variety of classes, saw something where he was a certified in electronics. He was a barber.
He was a tailor, dude. Like,
he was.
He could suit you up for your fucking tuxedo and shit.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, he was pretty awesome.
Like, he put his mind to something, and he fucking did it, apparently, because he was good at it.
Yeah. He was a clerk for a prison chaplain, I think, down in Vianna, Illinois, which is way south, almost in Kentucky, who said he knew Hirons was not guilty. He just said, I'd worked with inmates my whole career, and I know that this guy had
like,
did
I've spent so much
this.
Time with him. And
he did not do this.
There's no way it was in this person.
Right.
But who knows what the clergy does, because they put their things in some kids, too. So
yeah, well, that's, yeah, for sure. He was a model prisoner, adapted well behind bars, was a jailhouse lawyer for hundreds of prisoners that needed help, filed his own appeals after all his lawyers were done, you know,
and they
continued to fucking deny it.
They say that he has a lot to do with the progression of the, education system in the Illinois prison system.
Yeah.
Like he had a lot to do with how it.
How they teach the inmates. Though.
Yeah, how they teach them and like how it went from like, oh, we don't give a shit if they learn anything to more like, let's teach them something. They even if they're here, they no reason not to be smart.
Right. And maybe they won't come back.
And look at me sounding dumb while I'm talking about people being smart.
So despite all of this, though, he was denied parole, they said, 24 times.
That's so fucked. So
every time he went up for parole, they were like, fuck you. So
you're stuck here, dude.
Yeah. So
how fucking shitty would that be, man? You're like such the most model. Dude. You could be the most model person in the world just because somebody might have a grudge with you, or maybe you did do it, but like when you put that much effort into bettering yourself and you prove it.
Right.
And every time they're just like, fuck you.
Right.
How shitty would that be?
Yeah, it's awful, dude. Now, from what I read and watched about the case of William Hirons, I can't believe his lawyers didn't try to fight the weak evidence they had against him, because right. there was some weak shit. Hirons claimed he was led to believe the cops had more on him than when they actually found out what they had.
Right.
And that, of course, the media was a huge part of him looking guilty, too, because of all the fucking attention they gave it, you know?
Well, it was, like I said, it was right after World War II, so they're looking for their next big story.
Right.
And, like, they don't have nothing to talk about the war anymore, so they're just straight up like, okay, we found it. Let's go.
It's a story that sells, you know, good-looking young dude.
Right.
You know, these grisly murders. And
like, all right, it's got to be fucking him.
Yep. And when you consider the illegal searches that they did, the dorm room searches that they did without a warrant, his apartment, the interrogations without a lawyer or his parents since he was a fucking minor.
Since he was 17, yeah.
All sorts of shit that was done wrong here. It's an incredibly shaky case that unfortunately resulted in what I think was an innocent man spending 65 years behind bars. I think the nurse that moved to Phoenix, Richard Thomas, who is also the name of the actor that played John Boy, I believe. A different Richard Thomas, okay?
Okay.
Was the guy...
I'm like, I'm lost, what?
Was the guy that killed the Degnan girl, at least.
Oh, you're talking about the fucking Waltons, dude. God damn it.
John Boy, hello, yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Took you a couple minutes.
Yeah, it did.
Had to get through all the barley
I'm
and
like,
shit.
What the fuck is he talking
about? All the barley and the yeast and shit. I believe the other two murders were unrelated to the girl. I don't know, but that's
it doesn't
just me.
I agree.
It like, doesn't seem like I mean, it would be the same.
I mean, that's a huge progression.
Big time.
Like,
yeah, that's an about face. You don't go from
stabbing
shooting
and
someone in the head.
Complete dismemberment.
Yeah.
And it's, spreading the body parts everywhere. Yeah, like,
it's
it don't
not
make sense.
The same thing. So that's just my take on it. Sounds like we both agree. Hirons spent the bulk of his time at the minimum security prison in Dixon, Illinois, about another hour and a half north of here.
Yeah, about an hour. Yeah. Up 39. Yeah.
Yeah.
And off to the left, which would be west.
Right. He died from complications of diabetes at age 83 on March 5th, 2012. Ironically, 7 years ago today. So he died on the day that we're doing this podcast, which is kind of fucked up.
Holy shit, it is the fucking fifth.
Isn't it crazy?
God damn, that's fucking that is
so
fucking
that's pretty
nuts.
Crazy. And CK,
I'm like, wait, hold on.
And CK has an interesting thing about today that he's going to talk about when we have him on because of an anniversary on March 5th. So it is a very nice. Strange coincidences here. The research for this episode was done with a few documentaries I watched on YouTube. Sounds like we watched some of the same. That American Justice
yeah,
one was good with Bill
was
Curtis.
Really good, yes.
I love Bill Curtis stuff. He's just great. It includes also another one that we both watched, the interview with him with that chick who was really bad, really boring. Because he's not very exciting.
No,
so
he's just
the two of them
like,
were just, it's hard to watch it.
But there's details that he talks about, but it's just like hard to sit through.
Yeah, and you could tell he's told the story
a million times and he doesn't care anymore. He's like, yeah, I'm like, all
right. Right.
I'm here.
Because he was like, it was maybe 5 years before he died. So he's in like his late 70s in that interview. And I also listened to a couple of podcasts, which were tough to get through. There was one I had to turn it off because they were calling him a different name than William interchangeably. And then they were referring to a case at the time with the Lindbergh baby.
Right.
And they called her the Lindberger baby over and over and over. And I had to turn it off because I'm like,
I can't fucking
dude, like, seriously.
I understand, okay? If you make a mistake, but don't.
Right. We're a couple of fucking idiots doing a podcast and we're running like circles around these.
We don't know if we're pronouncing a name right. We'll fucking riff on it, dude. Whatever. Right. Doesn't matter.
No, this was just absurd. This was just absolutely absurd. So it was really bad. There was a book written about him, The Bloody Spur, which became a movie in 1956 called While the City Sleeps. I have the book. It seems like it's loosely based on it. They don't even use the names of anybody, so I didn't read it.
Right.
I have it. It was an interesting look, but it's just kind of like a Pulp Fiction-y kind of novel from that time period. Probably something I won't even read, just something kind of cool to keep. But you know, it's an interesting one, a case to discuss. I think a whole case could be made for the brutality, what they put him through, the false confessions.
Oh shit. You know, I just knocked over the fucking Slayer.
Oh my
Minotaur.
God. You knocked God over the Slayer it. Minotaur. Fuck.
Fuck.
And although CCK's got the finger necklace on again.
Yes, he does.
So
yes, he does.
He likes it. And did you like I put the eyeballs on Gein?
Well, he'd probably put them in a box anyway, so whatever. Fuck.
Now, next time, dude, we're going to do an interesting one we've been talking about.
Oh, I was going to just mention another book, though.
What's that?
The one by Dolores Kennedy.
Yeah, what was the name of that?
It's called His Day in Court.
Okay. Yeah, now she was an attorney that was with like an Innocence Project type of organization.
Her dad was an attorney that was actually.
She wasn't an attorney also?
I think she, if I remember right, she was an intern.
Okay.
For her dad, but okay. Either way.
Her dad believed in his innocence.
In his innocence. He was a pretty prestigious attorney, whatever, but, and he was about to get into it, and he said to his daughter, Dolores, I want you to come with me to talk to this guy because I don't think he did this.
Right.
And she even said, like, it was just weird having my dad ask me to do that because he had never done it.
Hmm.
But before everything got done, the dad died of cancer. And then a couple of years later, she's like, why did dad want me to do this? So she was like on his side the whole time. The book is fucking, I haven't read it myself, but every review I've read about it,
said it was
fucking
good.
Great.
Oh wow.
And any interviews I've
definitely
seen with her.
Check it out.
Yeah, any interviews I've seen with her were fucking really fucking good. So
yeah. Well, she was on the Bill Curtis.
She was definitely on there.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was not able to find the book just searching Bill Hirons book or whatever, or Lipstick Killer Bill Hirons. I tried a few different things and nothing came up but a couple of Kindle books, and they look kind of crappy, and I didn't know.
It's called His Day in Court.
All right, well, interesting. Now next week we're going to Russia. We're going to the frozen tundra of Russia with Alexander Petrushkin.
Yeah, we ain't playing checkers.
No, we're going to do a little chessboard killer.
We ain't playing checkers.
Yeah, he was the one that they called the chessboard killer. Very interesting. Especially with the strange twist of the chessboard corresponding with the number of murders he committed. I thought it was very neat.
It's fucking
creepy.
Up.
Another like, weird, creepy one.
You got to have this many numbers.
Right.
Chessboard.
So it's going to be a good one. Lots of blood and gore. Pretty violent shit. So it's going to be good next week. And I think I hear that familiar sound.
Choo-choo train.
Sounds like a little train, little CK coming in on the 920. Like always, he likes riding that train, man. He likes to make a big entrance.
So does my mom.
Ho!
Sorry, Mom, I love you. I know it ain't true.
So this time, though, CK's going to stick around for both metal and mayhem. So we're in for a treat this week. So what do you think we got to do?
Let's get our metal on. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of your girl having some nasty, stank-ass pussy? Something that smells like an animal died up in there? Well, fear no more. Thanks to Dr. Gein Vagina Maintenance, you can say goodbye to that graveyard-inspired rotten crotch forever.
Yes, my wife's pussy smelled like 10 motherfuckers died up there. But when I applied Dr. Gein Vagina Maintenance Cream, it smelled fresh and new.
Give your wife our special Mother's Day Pussy Be New basket with a tube of the maintenance cream, a bottle of our special jizz absorbent powder to keep the cum crystals down, and a hand towel to wipe that fucker down.
Thanks, Dr. Gein. Her pussy smells so good. I might just cut it off and put it in the shoebox with all the others.
Well, that's a topic for another day, son. Dr. Gein Vagina Maintenance. Buy some today for that rotten crotch pussy you love to hate.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That was so fucking funny. Cashman, fucking cash me outside, man.
Killing it, dude.
That was great. And Joey, my son, fucking killing it, both of them. CK, what do you think of that shit, dude? You going to go buy some vagina maintenance, man?
Oh, fuck yeah. After that.
Oh, my God. It's fucking ridiculous.
It's on the market now, people.
That's right. That's right. So thanks to that sponsor there, Dr. Gein's Vagina Maintenance. Now, CK, we got you on here.
Once again, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, dude. What's up over there in Danbury?
Doing all right. You know, just had some snow. It's cold as fuck.
Fuck.
This winter's bullshit, but, you know,
this winter is complete bullshit.
Yeah, it's a motherfucker, but you know it'll be really nice once the fucking weather changes and it starts to be spring, because I'm really looking forward to that, and I can't wait for fucking baseball, dude. I'm so fucking pumped. Yeah.
We ain't getting no spring anyway. This is going to jump right into fucking 100 degrees, dude.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll take it right now because I'm tired of this bullshit.
Yeah,
I can't deal with this shit no more.
Now, CK, we were talking in the murder segment about the odd coincidence that the killer that we talked about, William Hirons, died on March 5th of 2012.
And today is March 5th, March 5th. We record.
And oddly, you have a coincidence about March 5th.
Yes, I do.
That's fucking so fucked.
I thought we would start with that before you went into your metal segment.
Actually, on March 4th, 6 years ago, I went to the doctor because I was feeling like total shit. And after getting a CAT scan, I was notified that I had to go to the emergency room right away because there was a huge mass in my intestine, which basically ripped it apart.
You need to chew up those cheeseburgers before you eat them. You know that, right?
The funny thing is the last meal I had was fucking McDonald's. And I puked that up.
Oh, God.
That is fucked up.
That's why you don't eat McDonald's anymore, right?
No, exactly. And we went, called my wife, went to the hospital. Was told that, looked like I pretty much had cancer, and my rate of survival was about a 1% chance.
That's not a very big chance, sir.
No.
I had shit going through my body because my colon perforated, so I was in sepsis. They couldn't operate right away. They had to wait a day, which would be the 5th, which would be today.
Right.
To even operate, and they told Laura that, you know, my chances of making it to the table were slim. My chances of making it off the table were just as slim. And the hope for the best, and hopefully I'll survive and I'll be able to tell the tale. But
wow.
After 10 hours of surgery, I had the best surgery you could possibly have for this. They got the ass out.
They got the ass out. Did you just say they got the ass out?
No, the mass out.
Oh. I was like, that's the most perfect way to fucking put that. They just got the ass out.
That was later.
The ass came out at a later date.
All right. My bad.
So March 5th was day that I had my surgery, and still here to tell about it.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, when we started conversing, for those of, you know, people just listening that maybe don't know what the deal is with this guy we call CK, you and I started talking, you know, we obviously went to school together and
we knew each other.
But yeah. We weren't, like, you know, hanging out all the time, friends like that.
Once in a while, and it was,
at a concert.
It was a casual thing.
Yeah. And so when I saw Laura, your wife, post on Facebook that you were going to be doing chemo and that you were concerned, I think I had posted or commented, hey, you know, I've been through that. If, you know, maybe it would help if I talked to him, you know. And so that's when we started talking.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
man.
Exactly.
And then, actually,
I think you were the first one to even say anything. I think it was the day of, I believe it was day of my surgery or night of my surgery. I can't remember which one, but I remember. Wow. I remember Laura telling me that you contacted either me or her through Facebook because she was dealing with all that stuff.
Right, right.
And and then from that point on, it's been, you know, pretty much every week.
We started doing this, and it was like, why not get you involved? We started doing it with the vinyl.
And it's like, you know what? This motherfucker just needs to be on all the goddamn time. Just talking about just, metal, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it grew from there. We were, you know, we were experimenting. We were learning and how to do it, and we're still learning. You know, we're still trying to figure shit out. But it's cool that it's evolved to this, and so it's awesome to have you involved and doing a podcast on that special anniversary of that was definitely worth mentioning.
Yeah, so it's actually cool, and I think this time I was actually still in surgery. I don't think I came out until like 10:30, 11 o'clock that night. But
wow.
Yeah, and the most ironic thing is the last reoccurrence I had, you were actually visiting when I found out I had it.
That's right, yeah.
You know, one I'm going through now is you were actually came with me to my appointment and were in the waiting room when I found out.
Yep.
So.
Yep, things happen for a reason, I guess, huh?
Yep. But it's you know, it's all good shit.
Yeah,
I don't feel sorry for myself. I don't expect anybody to feel sorry for me.
You're one of the strongest people. I mean, I've never personally met you. We've been doing this shit, and we talk a lot. But you're one of the strongest people I know, dude. Because you push through that fucking shit. So fucking fuck cancer.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, I really do appreciate the compliment. No, and I actually do have a shirt that says fuck cancer on the back of it, you know,
so
it's all good.
Now, you come on here, of course, every week, and we talk about metal, and you handpick the bands typically, or we might talk about it.
It's all your choice, man.
So what do you have for us this week, dude? We're going old school, I know that.
We're going old school. We're going to travel up to the Pacific Northwest.
Nice.
To a state called Washington. And a town called Seattle before the grunge scene.
Before the grunge scene.
And we're gonna do some fucking metal church, baby.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, that is old school. I mean, I can remember being in my apartment jamming that shit and listening to metal church, you know, with my friends, and just there were one of those early bands when you started getting into the non-mainstream metal.
It's not only just
old school, it's also the total other edge of the continent that we've been talking about
right.
for the past few weeks.
Yeah, we've been on the East Coast, so like you picked this northwest band. That's cool.
So we're going out west a little bit, and you know metal church originally called. And I love the early band names of like most of these
bands.
Oh, yeah. Lubricants.
Is it Lubricants?
That was so funny in that Out of the Basement documentary with the big banner behind it.
That's a Lubricants.
Lubricants all the way across the stage. Oh, my God. That was so fucking funny. So, sorry.
Awesome?
What was their first name?
And this is like your typical band metal band name like in the early 80s. Shrapnel. Yeah. So they started out as Shrapnel.
Right.
Originally, Kurt Vanderhoof, the guitarist, who is at this point the only constant member through the band. And Vanderhoof, that's definitely not a rock and roll fucking last name.
Right. There it is.
That's a train. There it is. Yeah, all right here. Yeah, well, no, there it is.
So they eventually changed it. They started in California, moved to Washington, more or less Seattle, and changed the name to Metal Church. Now
why did they change their name to Metal Church?
Just liked it better, maybe? Or
I guess it was just a little bit more catchier.
Yeah, shrapnel, you know.
Shrapnel's like a generic fucking
right.
name.
Right, you might as well call your
spatula.
Shotgun shell.
and Metal Church could be, you know, either do one of two things. It could be like just a cheesy band name, or it could actually be cool and it could be a really great band.
Right.
You know, and again, we're going back to the early 80s. So when this shit came out, we had no point of reference for it.
Right.
So again, you had to go by your instincts. And when you saw the first album cover with the Gibson Explorer.
Yeah, in the ground.
With the cross.
Yeah.
Looked like it was coming out of the ground. And it was what they call the cruciform. So it was like, either this is going to be really fucking cool.
Or cheesy as hell.
Yeah. Stupid.
And luckily, this stayed in the kick ass pile.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
you got to love it when you get those albums that come out in the kick ass pile. Because I hate it. I hate it.
It's like fire in the brain, dude. Fucking Oz.
Oh, God. That was the worst. But this album just grabbed you from the beginning, and it was like just rolling train throughout the whole album. You know, they did a killer version of Highway Star by Deep Purple.
Oh yeah, I did like that.
And the original.
Did we just lose him?
Could actually sing, you know. And again, they toured with everybody, opening for anybody they could. They opened for Metallica. I think I saw him. I mean, I know I saw him with Metallica, and they're another band which I saw probably like 10 times, either opening for another band or they headlined, and they were playing all the time.
That happened, you know, a lot with it was a band. Who the fuck was it? Why can't it? Anyway, but yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
There
are certain bands that just always seem to be there
for
all
somebody
the time.
All the time. I know what you're saying. Like,
they were one of them, and you know, every time I saw them, they just kicked ass, you know, and they quickly followed up the self-titled album with The Dark.
Yeah, that was good.
Which is just another killer fucking album. Not one bad tune on it. And, you know, unfortunately, David Wayne had a drug problem.
Who doesn't these days?
He was a great singer, though. I really liked him.
Yeah, he had a very unique voice, kind of like a Paul. Wasn't Paul Beloff, but when I say unique, it was kind of like Paul Beloff. But they found Mike Howe, who was in a California band called Heretic. They had an album out by Metal Blade, which is a great fucking album. It's called The Breaking Point. So they recruited him and put out the Blessing in Disguise album in 89. Really great album. At that point, it was still the original members. And the funny part is David Wayne actually formed a band called Reverend. And what he did is he took the two of the four members of Heretic and formed that band.
Nice. That's fucking awesome.
With Scott Ian's brother as the drummer.
Oh, wow.
Anthrax.
I was going to say, Scott Ian?
Yeah. Jason Ian Rosenfeld, because Scott Ian's real name is Rosenfeld. But,
right.
You know, they had two good albums that were... that kicked ass. So they put out a couple albums with Mike Howe up until 99. He put out Hanging in the Balance in 93. No, I'm sorry. They put out in 91. They put out The Human Factor. 93 was Hanging in the Balance. And that's where you saw, you know, a couple different members leaving. They recruited, I don't know if you guys remember when James Hetfield hurt himself when he was skateboarding years ago.
I do remember that.
Yes, his arm or whatever.
And, yeah, and they had their
guitar. Yeah, they had
the guitar tech, John Marshall. Well, he joined Metal Church.
Oh no, shit! I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah,
that's cool. It's
you play with Metal Church. In 99, they released, or 93, they released Hanging in the Balance, which was the last album with Mike Howe before they went on a hiatus / they broke up. And that album, funny enough, was put out on Blackheart Records. And if nobody knows who owns Blackheart Records, Joan Jett's label, yeah.
Huh.
I mean, it is called Blackheart Records, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
that album was actually sleeper because remember we were talking last week about like 92, 93, 94.
Right, kind of lost
certain
years.
Bands got into those ruts.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging in the Balance was actually a really decent album for that time, and it was a good album. Nobody even knew it was coming out.
Right.
Nice.
After that album, they broke up for a while. 99, they reformed the original band with David Wayne. Put out great album on Nuclear Blast called Masterpiece. Again, you saw the return of the Cruciform on the album cover.
Nice.
Great album, solid album. And shortly after that, they had issues with David Wayne again. David Wayne left Metal Church, went on to form his own band called Wayne, put out an album called Metal Church.
He called his band Wayne?
Wayne, after his last name.
Okay. So it's like Winger.
Right, or Van Halen.
Yeah.
Or G-Money.
Puts out B-Boot.
Her B-Boo.
Oh!
So fucking good. Dude, that B-Boo shit's so fucking funny. What the fuck? Like, Pete showed me the sticker that he still got on his bitch.
Oh,
like,
yeah, is that picture. Shit funny?
I'm like, oh, he legit had fucking, like, B-Boo.
Oh, yeah. I was proud at one point.
Can't make that shit up.
Hell no.
So so David Wayne puts out an album called Wayne with the title called Metal Church.
Oh God.
And you look at the cover, you could have easily confused it as a Metal Church album.
Oh sure.
I mean, you know, like you called it Metal Church. You came from the band called Metal Church.
Most people probably thought it was a Metal Church album.
Right.
And I'm surprised he even gets sued from it, but
yeah, really.
That is honestly surprising.
You know, unfortunately, a couple years later, David Wayne was in a car accident, suffered some injuries, and never really recovered. And I think like a year or two later, actually died from complications from that accident. So you know, he passed away. Metal Church reformed again after that. With different players. I don't think there was an original band member at that time when they reformed in
So how was 2000... If there was not an original band member, how was
well,
it?
Well, besides
Vanderhoof's the only one.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, besides Vanderhoof.
That makes a difference. It's his band, so okay.
But there are bands out there with not one original member, and we could get into that one day.
Yeah, that'd be a good conversation.
Yeah, it would be a very good conversation. Like, how are you going to be a band when there's no original member in this band?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so that could be a good topic one day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So they put out in 2004, he got a singer called Ronnie Monroe. Kind of similar to what Mike Howe sounded like and what David Wayne sounded like. They put out some four decent albums with him. The Weight of the World, A Light in the Dark, This Present Wasteland, and Generation Nothing. Nothing really to write home about, but they were decent. Eventually, Ronnie Monroe left to pursue a solo career. And Mike Howe returned 20 years later and recorded Metal Church 9. And most recently, in December of 2018, they put out a kick-ass album called Damn If You Do. I believe they're doing small tours. Nothing major, but it's a great album if you get a chance to check it out.
It just came out in 2018?
Yeah, like December of 2018. Oh, so like pretty recent.
Pretty
yeah,
recent.
It wasn't all right. bad at all.
Nice. No, I haven't heard it. No, that's fucking cool, man.
You know, so.
Very cool.
You know, that's Metal Church. And next week, we're going to stay in the Pacific Northwest and we're going to do.
Nirvana?
No. No. we're gonna do Sanctuary / Nevermore.
Okay, cool.
All right.
That's cool. Now, I wanted to mention, CK, because we've been talking about this coming out, that new Queensryche, The Verdict, that came out on Friday.
Oh, God.
Wow, it's fucking killer, man. It's
God.
Really good, man.
It's a kick-ass album. This Friday, if anybody's interested, Indestructible Noise Command.
Oh, this their new album. This Friday. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I want to hear
gonna
it.
It's going to be available on Apple iTunes, Amazon Digital. And the CD will, I was told, I actually got a message from one member of the band. He said the CD is going to be released on the release date on Amazon, so it can be ordered.
Oh, are you? Is it on vinyl?
They're going to wait to see how it does before they put it on vinyl.
Okay, so if it comes out on vinyl, are you going to get it?
Probably.
Oh yeah, most likely. Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's what's up.
Now they
I heard some tunes from this. Holy shit! It goes back to the early days when he did The Visitor and the first album.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear this.
Just a straight up thrash album. So you know, it should be some kick ass stuff.
That's awesome. Now the Queensryche Fates Warning tour kicked off Saturday in Orlando. And they're going to be up here in a couple weeks in Chicago. Definitely going to be psyched to see them with the original bass player and friend of ours, CK, Joe DeBias, which is going to be amazing.
It's DeBias.
AKA Bones.
Right, AKA Bones. That should be fucking killer. So that's going to be really killer.
I am so fucking jealous, dude.
I know, dude. I know.
Get you a flight, bro.
I know, right?
Yeah, Thursday the 14th. Any local news other than we've got the kick-ass Heart of Illinois
100%.
Field of Screams.
Other than that, there's nothing. I mean, the boys that we know are still working on recording.
Right.
Recording takes time, as you well know.
Right.
The boys that we know are still working. I haven't heard of any new local shows coming around this area.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, we've been doing some good house parties up at Pete's place, which has been fun.
Dude, we had a good time.
Pete from Chalk has been having some cool little house parties. I was over there Saturday.
Dude, when Chase was playing, I didn't know Chase could play fucking drums, dude.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I didn't see him play, but I heard he was really good.
Dude, Chase is drumming. Pete was playing guitar and Cashman's doing vocals. I'm like, this is a new fucking band right here, dude. What the fuck is going on?
It was cool. And Dan Steinlich showed up and it was a good time.
Dude.
So Dan, it's always good. Now, CK, we're going to keep you over into Mayhem because I know you said you got a good story to share with us.
Yeah, I got a little story.
I've got some good.
We can't leave talking about metal without that Full Terror Assault lineup.
Oh, dude.
The lineup looks nasty, don't it?
It is nasty,
Holy
dude.
Holy shit. If I could find a way to fucking go, I would fucking go. Yeah.
I'm going to get an RV, and I'm going down RV, dude.
We're going to FTA.
Yeah, I'm
going
to be fucking styling, dude. Clean Eaters,
Sexual Atrocities, Jungle Rot, Chrisix, fucking...
Violence.
Violence, dude.
Yeah,
like,
it's going to be badass. M.O.D. M.O.D.
Doing a half, supposedly a set of half MOD stuff and SOD.
Yeah.
How
and we played SOD Kill Yourself earlier, so that's what gave me the inspiration to play some.
FTA is going to be fucking shit.
Yeah. And we're anxious. Oh. We're anxiously awaiting them to decide what they're going to do for press, because we're on the list to try to get
Murder
Metal
there,
Mayhem in there. So hopefully it'll work out. So we'll keep everybody posted.
That'd be kick-ass. Now I want to give a shout out to Cashman, because he's hooking me up with some Goremonger stuff. So
nice.
Hell yeah.
Speaking of that, we've got some Goremonger we're going to play here in a moment.
As soon as we're done with this metal segment, Goremonger live.
We've got a cut that we recorded Joey's whole set here on Sunday, and we've got a cut from that Confessions of a Small Town Pervert.
Such a good fucking
which is fucking awesome. So we'll play that as we tag out of this, and we'll let people check out the whole song. So we're going to play it's about 2 minutes and 10 seconds. We'll let it play out, and then we'll go into Mayhem. How does that sound, CK?
That sounds fucking awesome to me.
All right. Yeah, well, here we go.
So this is my last song. Thanks, Hornside Studios, Pete, Chris, Murder of Mayhem, all that shit. You know how it goes. This is Confessions of a Small Town Pervert.
Yeah.
Well. And I'm going up that little shadow of the day to do why I made from a mustard dye. Out of the door, he was learning all his skills. When he's like a country boy, born to kill.
Fuck yeah, man.
Fucking live Goremonger in the Horns High Studios,
first
brother.
Band to play live at Horns High Studios. Joey Cashman
fucking
doing
killing
Goremonger.
It. Doing what he
killer
does.
Killer stuff.
Killing that grind shit, man.
Yeah, Joey's a good dude, and it was cool to have him break the proverbial cherry in here. gently.
But, the fact that he was here fucking for last week and his comment that the name was Buster Cherry.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I gotta say that shit.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, holy shit. So, yeah, Cashman, you Buster Cherry, dude.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, we got CK. We held you over because you said you had a good story. We've got quite a few stories here coming up. They're relatively shorter. So go for it. I'll let you go first because I got quite a bit coming up after you.
Okay. Ellie knows before I met Laura, I was actually, this is my second marriage. Before I met Laura, I was previously married. And the funny thing is, I knew probably maybe 2 weeks after we got married that I'm like,
what
this
the
ain't
fuck?
Fucking,
right, yeah. What did I do?
Yeah.
Why?
No, meanwhile,
buyer's remorse.
Yeah, meanwhile, before I got married, I had people trying, you know, are you sure? Are you? Yeah, stupid. Yeah, I was fucking young, dumb, and in love.
Supposedly. Young, dumb, full of cum.
I would say maybe. Oh, motherfucker.
You there?
You good?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I can hear you, yeah.
All right. I just started to hear the submarine sound. Yeah. All right, so we're still good. So, like 2 weeks after we were married,
I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
What it sounds like, though, now that he says that.
Yeah, no, you said the submarine sound. I never thought of
that. That's what it sounds like.
It does.
The underground.
That's fucking hilarious.
That's what it sounds like.
It does. You're right.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, that's fucking funny. Hilarious.
Sorry, dude.
Sorry.
That's all right. This is what the podcast is all about.
Right.
Yes, sir. Sure.
So like 2 weeks after we're married, it just... her fucking behavior is like just all getting all fucked up, you know. And I guess I should have, you know, lived with her first before I got married. I didn't know she was fucking really bipolar.
How did you not know?
You don't know. Sometimes you just don't know shit until you live with people.
Right.
Right.
But, you know, we get married. She couldn't hold a fucking job if you put a knife to her throat. She probably had like 6 years of her marriage. She probably had like 10 different fucking jobs.
And you stayed married for 6 years?
Yeah, well, I'll get to the reason why in a
minute. It's like, there's a concept to that.
You know, yeah. So, you know, she was put on pills and eventually it leveled off and all this shit. So it was all right for a while. But I don't know. I came home from work one day, and this was getting towards the end, and she said something to me like, "You were out cheating with." I go, "What the fuck are you talking about?" I go, "I'm getting back and more. I was at fucking work." "No, you were out cheating." I'm like, "What?" I go, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
I was fucking licking on them fucking.
I fucking should have, but I never did. And she fucking picks up a knife and starts coming at me with a fucking knife.
Oh, fuck.
Are you serious, dude?
Damn. I'm fucking dead serious. I'm fucking dead serious.
Oh, wow.
And so I go, I grab her hand. I go, I just started yelling. I go, "You don't know what the fuck you're doing." And I got the knife out of her hand.
You stab her? Did you stab her?
No. So I called her. I called her mom. I said, "I don't know what the fuck's going on, but, you know, she needs to go to the hospital because she just tried to stab my mom." I was like, "What?" Wow. So she went to the fucking psych ward at Danbury Hospital.
Oh, damn.
They adjusted her medicine. It was okay for a while. But, you know... I couldn't trust her with knives, so I took all the knives and I hit him.
Dude, this shit came at you with a fucking knife, dude.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's
dude.
No fucking you know, fun.
So the funny thing is, like, this is maybe like a year later, I came home from work and the reason why I didn't ask for the divorce is because I figured if I asked for the divorce, I divorced her, she'd probably kill herself. I didn't want that fucking...
No, you don't want that on your head at all.
Yeah, I didn't want that shit on my hands. So, you know, I felt like an asshole. I stuck it out. So I came home from work one Saturday. I remember it was one Saturday. She goes, "I want a divorce." I go, "You sure?" She goes, "Yep." I go, "Okay. No problem.
Sign them papers right now. Later."
Yep. So we got a divorce. Then I met Laura. And the funny thing is where the house I live in, believe it or not, was owned by my ex's grandmother.
Right. Yeah, I think you told me that when I was out there. That's so fucked up.
So when we got divorced, her grandmother goes, "You could stay if she could leave." She goes, "I don't trust her."
Wait, hold on. She was kicking her own fucking granddaughter out and letting you stay?
She goes, you could stay. She goes, I trust you. I know you'll pay rent. I know there won't be an issue.
That's fucking nuts.
So, yeah. So eventually, Laura moved in, and she's moving in, and she goes, hon. I go, yeah. She goes, I got a weird question for her. She goes, why are all these knives on top of the refrigerator?
Oh shit!
All these.
I forgot I put knives? Them there.
Yeah. Oh, you hit the knives.
I hit the knives. And I go, I go, yeah, well, my ex tried to stab me, and she's, and we're talking normal, and like 2 inches, she goes, what? I go, yeah, she tried to fucking stab me. She
tried to fucking kill me, damn, dude.
So, wow. That's my little mayhem story.
Right, that's pretty that's fucked a good up,
one.
Man.
That's a good one. Now, I'm going to follow that up. Chris, I give you the option.
Oh, no, you know which one I want.
You want sending the Marines to Tim's house?
Yeah.
Or breaking fucking down in Oklahoma?
No, Tim's house.
All right.
Tim.
All right.
We got to praise Tim, man.
Well, Tim, yeah, former Low 12 Axe Master Tim McClellan. He was a victim of some of my joking that I like to do.
I think I remember. I think you might have told me this one. Holy shit!
Well, I was like at a Quiznos or I was somewhere, and they had one of those things where you could fill it out to get like a free free massage or something like that.
Get the fuck out.
And you put your name and your number or whatever and your address. I did something like that, but it was for the Marines, and I put Tim's name and his address and his phone number and shit. And I just threw it in the thing, you know,
and let it go. Like
so, then, like a month later, he said he was in his living room, completely fucked up. I mean, like to where he said he couldn't even walk across the room without like holding on to shit.
That's fucking funny.
And he's in like a bathrobe and he's like naked underneath it. I mean, like he's fucked up.
It's like, thank you, Tim. I appreciate this. So fucking
he's
asshole.
Sitting there zoned out on his couch and he hears boom, 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 boom on the fucking door. And he's like, thinks it's the fucking cops, you know?
Of course.
Because he used to have all sorts of vegetation in the basement. Yeah. So
what?
It was always a concern. So anyway, he opens the door, and it's like the middle of the fucking day, which is why he was naked in a bathrobe and that fucked up. In the middle of the day is a whole nother story.
He was
story.
Naked in the bathrobe because he was that fucked up.
He opens the door, and he said it was so fucking bright, it was like blinding. And there was like five dudes on the porch with like camouflage, like long... like military pants with the boots,
all fatigued
t-shirts,
up. Yeah, all fatigued
with
up,
t-shirts
yeah.
that said Marines on
oh,
them,
Christ.
High and tight fucking haircuts, all
that's fucking
like
fun, dude.
Like all fucking amped the fuck up,
like we got
hey, Tim, we got you, you know, like we're ready. Are you ready? You want to go on a run? And he's like, I don't go to fucking running.
He's like, dude, I'm just trying to get high and fucking drink some Budweiser, man.
So it was pretty fucking funny, but he said while he was standing there, he was thinking of my name to tell them to go to my house because he knew it was me that set this up.
Of course.
He's like, I don't know how you did this, but I know it was you, you know. But he couldn't think of my address, and he was so fucked up, he just like, which, I got to go, and he just like fucking
those
shut the
kind
door.
Of stories bring us to the fresh story, man.
Yes. Yes.
Today, well, today. Between yesterday and today, people put work in. Today's March 5th. So, I was lucky enough to see my brother open this package.
Yes.
So, let him know what's up. It's so fucking funny, dude.
Well, anybody that knows Michael Shawback, Chris's brother, knows that he fucking hates the band Disturbed. I mean, just fucking hates them. I mean, we all do. They're fucking lame as fuck, right? So we have this ongoing joke, me and Michael, about, you know, Disturbed. And I like to tag him on Facebook anytime I see something going on.
This is your favorite shit right here,
you know, with
it?
Disturbed, I tag him in it, you know. So it's been just like, ha, ha, ha. Well, when we were doing the studio... And we were demoing out some of the old cabinets. Yeah,
on the top of that one cabinet.
A disturbed, there was a disturbed CD fell out of the cabinet. And it was Joey's or one of Joey's friends when he used to hang out here when it was a
Not
garage.
Not Cashman.
Right. So, yeah, let's make that clear. So we've got
your son Joey, right?
Yeah, my son Joey. Yeah. So we've got this disturbed CD now. We're laughing about it. And we're trying to think, what are we going to do with it? Because we got to do something.
We've just been fucking with each other about it for fucking so long.
So,
like, hey, this is your favorite CD. You left it sitting on the counter, left it here, man, or whatever. You know?
So we've been fucking with each other about it. So anyway, Sunday when everybody was here, we were in here doing some fake commercials. And he throws it on the table while I'm doing the commercial, you know, and I'm like, fucker, douche. You know?
Asshole.
So when I got up to get out, to go out into the other room, I put the CD in the hood of his sweatshirt, you know, without him seeing it.
Dude, no, and what Michael did is amazing, dude. Michael found it in his fucking hoodie, dude. And when we were leaving, Pete's car is fucking, like, pulled in there, and the driver's side's right by our car where we were parked.
Right.
So he just sets it on the damn window.
Right.
Like, that way when Pete opens the door, yeah, it's sitting right there, dude. It was so fucking hilarious.
So later, a couple hours later, me and Jenny are leaving to go eat. And we see this fucking CD on the car, and I'm like, oh, fucker, you know.
This motherfucker.
So I'm like, fuck. I'm like trying to think. I'm like, just threw it in my car. I'm like, I got to do something. I don't know what. So I let it kind of percolate for a couple
days. He went
to
extremes, too. It's fucking hilarious.
Oh, this is epic,
dude.
You're going to lose it. So anyway, I tried to think of something very elaborate, just something funny. And I came up with one that I think is got to be up there in the pantheon of pretty fucking going to the extreme to play a joke on somebody that you could possibly do.
It's pretty fucking good.
Within reason, obviously.
And I was, like I said, I was lucky enough to witness.
Yeah, now you were there. I packaged this thing up and put it in a priority envelope and sent it U.S. mail so it would come.
Oh, no.
So more dramatic effect, okay? Because, I mean, just throwing it in an envelope wouldn't have done it justice. All right. So what I did was I took the CD, and I won't tell you what I did to it. The letter explains what I did to it.
Okay? Yes, it does.
And it comes from, it's got the Disturbed logo on the top. So it looks very official.
It looks like a legit letterhead.
Yeah.
It says, and then Pete wrote all this
shit. Down with the Sickness Fan Club, 333 Silence Parkway, Chicago, Illinois. And it says Michael Shawback with his address. Dear Michael, it is our pleasure here at Down with the Sickness Fan Club to announce that you are the grand prize winner for the most disturbed fan contest.
The most disturbed.
Enclosed, you will find your prize. From thousands of entries, the letter that you sent in touched David Draymond in a very special way. He actually teared up when you talked about how Disturbed saved your life from the depths of despair. In case you forgot what you mailed in, here's an excerpt. And it quotes, "I was at the lowest point of my life without much reason to go on when I first heard your version of The Sound of Silence. It picked me up and showed me that I had the power to rise and make something of myself. For that, I can't say enough how much I love the band Disturbed and for their contribution to heavy metal. Metal itself would be dead if it weren't for them." Okay?
And it's got a couple of pictures there of some fucking Disturbed tattoos that are
It says here, David was openly weeping when he read that, but what was the clincher were the two pictures you sent in with tattoos of the band that you've had done, and it's got like a big chest piece with Disturbed, and then it's got a, like a calf tat that says Down with the Sickness.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking ridiculous. Dude, the last part of, dude, the last part of it is the best. The last part of it, wait.
Here we go.
Get ready.
In closing, David wanted to give you a very special prize, and that is the enclosed Disturbed CD directly from his own CD player and the load of semen that he added to it. He masturbated at the sight of your tattoos and reading your letter. As we mentioned, it touched him in a unique way. Please know that he gives this to you with much love and undying admiration. He said that he plans on dedicating their next album to you and maybe calling it The Sound of Michael. David wanted us to let you know that his special, quote, Drain Man prize is one he's Drain never Man. Offered before, but he felt so moved by your letter in response to our contest, he felt, quote, down with the Shawback.
Dude, that's so fucking
sincerely, good. And here's always my calling card with the funny name closing, sincerely, Al-Qaeda. President down with the Sickness fan club. So,
dude, that's just fucking sick.
So there you go.
Now, and the check this out, dude. Now, I was lucky enough, like I said, I was lucky enough to fucking be there when Michael got the package at his house and opened it, because like I walked into the house with him, he looked at the package, saw his name on it. He's like, "What the fuck is this?" And I just like, I just kind of walked away and kept doing what I was doing. I was at his house. I was like, "Okay, I know what I'm doing." And he opens it up, and all I happen to be right next to him, and all of a sudden he's just like, "I'm fucking stabbing him." I'm like, "Wait, what the fuck's going on?" He's like, "You're fucking podcast co-host." I'm like, "What?" And then I was like, "Oh, it's a mail." But I knew what it was because he didn't tell me exactly what it was.
Yeah, but I told you I played a joke.
Yeah, he played a joke on it. But as soon as I realized what it was, I was like, "Ah, he got you, you motherfucker!" And then when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, he got you good."
Yeah, it's in like a Ziploc, and I was looking for like white soap because right. I did that to Meister with one of his guitars. He left it at the house.
You actually jerked off on it?
Well, I made it look like I did. I put fucking soft soap all over it. I took pictures of it and sent it to him.
I don't buy that.
He was all fucking pissed off. Anyway, I don't know why. But I couldn't find any soap that worked. But Adam has this shampoo that's like white. So I fucking just put a bunch of that in the bag.
That's fucking funny.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking gnarly.
Oh, shit.
So there you go. It's the new, my newest chapter in my jokes played on Friends book. So that's a good one. And Michael was a good sport about it. He thought it was funny.
No, he thought it was great, dude. Fucking
how can you
brother.
Not think it's funny?
Well, I told him. You got to know I give a shit about you. If I went to that length and spent $7.95 to mail it to you.
Hey, look, he's like I told you earlier, Pete, he's like, I'm finding something. And he found something, I think, that you're going to be like, are you fucking serious?
Nice. Right. I welcome it. Now, one thing quick. We did have a thing we posted on Facebook last week. A listener sent us an email, I think it was.
Yeah, you texted me that.
That said that he was at a gas station in Galesburg, Illinois, which is west of Peoria. And he saw, he had a Murder Metal Mayhem sticker on his car.
And there was a fucking Illinois Department of Corrections van with one passenger.
Right. And he was pointing at the sticker and giving him the fucking horns up.
It's like, oh, so yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
So to all our listeners there in the joint, you know.
Yeah, keep it up, man.
Crank it the fuck
don't
up.
Don't murder somebody. Yeah. Damn.
Don't be on the podcast. You can
yeah.
listen to
yeah,
them.
Don't be a subject of like the that. Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, please, guys. But we appreciate all the listeners, even the guys that are locked up. Especially, they got nothing else going on. Hopefully, it makes the time go by.
Right? Like, oh, shit. That could have been me.
Right. Now, we had a great time in here on Sunday, Horns High Studios, with the boys from Big Bad Hogs Barbecue. Did an interview.
Yes. Unfortunately, I was not able to be here for the interview, right. Which is whatever. It's cool. They're here with us. They're our boys. They hung out for Cashman.
Yeah.
Pete did a great interview with them. So, check them boys out. They will cook you some fucking food.
Yeah, they're going to be doing the catering for the 50th episode, and we talked about that before. But I've got an interview I did about 20 minutes, just shy of 20 minutes. We're going to post as a standalone like we've done with those before. Right. And we'll put an excerpt maybe next week. We'll put like a 10-minute piece of that in there. It was really cool. It was a good discussion. Dude.
fucking good dudes. Mike, James, and Paulie, dude, they all good boys, dude. Yeah. They work hard at what they're aspiring to do something.
Yeah.
And they love their fucking metal.
Yeah. And like you said, we had Joey Cashman in here to play some Gormonger, and they stuck around. So we had a little crowd in there, which was fun.
Yeah, we had some people in here for Monger.
So it was cool. And we videotaped and audioed the whole thing. It's about, 12, 13 minutes, because his songs are only a couple
Cashman's
minutes.
Cashman's got short songs, but
so
they're good.
It was fun, and we got it all, and we're going to put that on YouTube. So you'll be able to watch that. And check out Joey's stuff, and then we're going to make that a standalone podcast as well, with the interview we did from last week and the him jamming in the studio. So we've got both of those.
It's always good to have fucking good people around the studio with us.
Yeah, so it's going to be awesome to do that. Now, we do have a little bit of business to get to, guys, before we leave, and that is a little killer cage match.
I don't like fights, man.
Now, we've got, thanks to our listeners, Janice Kunkel and Carly Kottner for the random numbers. We appreciate it, ladies. Those of you listening that have never heard this before, the killer cage match is a thing we came up with. We made a list of 60 killers, 60 objects. We have the listeners pick the numbers randomly. And then we look them up, and then we make two people fight to the death with two funny objects. Usually they're funny or crazy.
No, actually, one of the objects in this one is, and the object makes it more biased to me than anything.
Okay. All right. Well, this week we've got Al Capone. We all know who Al Capone is. And who else do we have?
The Green River Killer.
Right? Gary Ridgway.
Gary Ridgway coming out. But they're coming out with a bone saw.
A bone saw, which could be pretty brutal in close quarters.
Yeah, 100%.
Gnarly.
Both weapons are close quarters.
Oh, fuck yeah. Dude.
I mean, both weapons are.
But what about the second one?
Is a goddamn snapping turtle.
And I think this is the first time we've introduced a live animal.
100%.
So I want to point out, before we have PETA fucking banging the fucking door down.
Fuck PETA.
We didn't hurt a PETA. That, you know, could be me. Huh?
People eating tasty animals.
But we didn't hurt any animals in the recording of this podcast. So,
nah, just my soul.
So what do you think, man? We've
no,
got...
Ridgway wins. You know why?
Because of the river.
Because of the river and the turtle. 100%. Okay. He's like, I'm going to catch
you. He can handle a turtle. I'm thinking Capone wouldn't even know what to do. He'd probably get his ass bit.
Yeah. Right? Ridgway, in my opinion, Ridgway wins this. He's like, Green River. Oh, you're from the river? Oh, you got a snapping turtle, too? But what if Capone's
a pretty big. I mean, he was fat, but I mean, he was a pretty good sized dude.
But he also had. I don't think he's
agile, so he can't get out of his way.
Right.
Right.
And he made his way up to fucking top captain in the fucking mafia, but after that, he didn't fucking do shit. Like, he had everybody
He gave orders, so.
Right.
So, so he probably lost his touch and probably got a little soft.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you.
Ridgway
was a little smaller dude, but I think he's kind of crafty. And like you said, he's adept at dealing with the river because that's where he fucking left all his bodies and shit.
I mean, he may not be. Maybe I'm taking it from the name Green River, but he may not be adept to the river like that. Probably. Who knows?
Yeah, but if he spent a lot of time getting bodies down there and then killing them down there,
he knows what's up. But yeah, I'm going Ridgway.
Yeah,
he may not have been like
a Steve Irwin or some shit like that, but I think he's probably he's more adept at dealing with the snapping turtle, I think, than Al Capone.
Capone wasn't
who was removed
shit.
From it, and just like Chris said, CK said, just barking orders and not really doing anything physical.
I'm definitely going with fucking Ridgway.
Green River fucking kicking his ass, snapping his ass. So.
Snapping his ass. Could you imagine if you had a big old fucking snapping turtle the way that fucking turtle, you ever watch that turtle shit?
Oh, yeah.
Fucking hold him like that and that motherfucker grabs a hold of your fucking face?
Oh, dude.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, that shit was so bad.
What if he grabs a hold of your What if it grabs a hold of your pecker, man?
Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's gone. Yeah, exactly. It's no more. If you got a big one, it's gone, dude. No more dick.
Oh, God.
No more dick.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
All right, well, CK, thanks for sticking around for two segments this week. Always good to have you around. And
Hell yeah.
Having a good time chatting and being silly over here, and we're going to keep fucking forging the fuck on. So, CK, you have a good rest of your week, and talk to you next week.
Hey, man, can you do me a favor real quick, though?
Yeah, what's a favor?
Hey, CK, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
One of these times that you burp that bag, can you put it in a jar and send it to me? I want to smell it.
Oh, God, you don't want to fucking... If I... You know what? If I could, I would. Just think of... Here's the thing with that. Sometimes it doesn't smell at all.
Right.
Sometimes it could smell like the fucking sewage from like a fucking sewage plant. It just makes you want to fucking gag.
I want the worst one you got. Send it to me, brother. Love you.
All right. You asked for it.
Wow. All right, CK. Well, there you go. See you later, buddy.
Later.
Fucking violence, man.
Violence.
Serial killer.
Dude, I like fucking Fruity Pebbles. I like fucking...
Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms. Yeah. I like fucking goddamn Cinnamon Toast Crunch. There I'm a go. Serial killer motherfucker.
No, those guys are going to be at the FTA show.
Yes, they are, dude. And I'm going to be there.
Badass. Yeah, I'm planning on being there as well, especially if Murder Metal Mayhem is going to be in there. That'll be wicked.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, me too. The bumper music this episode by Metal Church, Gormonger, SOD, and Violence. Thanks, everybody listening out there. We just keep seeing the hits. Just keep coming, the listens.
We appreciate comments. All that goddamn
thanks,
shit.
Guys.
You motherfucking nasty motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Keep spreading that shit.
Yeah,
love
you guys are fucking awesome, dude. We got some good comments this time. Chris, what's that first one?
Kim Steele. I apologize. Kim Steele.
That's a very metal-sounding name.
Steele. Yeah. Anyway. I love this story about the man from the train. So I bought the book and just started reading it. Thanks for turning me on to a true crime story I didn't know anything about before. And fuck yeah, and as Cashman was here for the Mad Gasser, he didn't know. He's like, turn him on. And so, Kim, I'm glad that me and Pete are able to turn you on to something that you can know something fresh about.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to be able to turn people on to stories they didn't know about. And that's always what we've been trying to do with not every episode,
not
but
every
some
episode,
of them we kind of
go
obscure. I think tonight with William Hirons definitely is going to be one of those a lot of people may not know about. So
no,
I think that's cool.
You read about William Hirons, you're going to be like, what?
Yeah, and that man from the train story is very fucking wicked with the fucking cross-country fucking murder spree.
So stuff.
101
so fucked
victims,
up,
man. Lee Roberts commented, your Black Dahlia episode was really good. I wasn't familiar with that former LA cop saying that he thought the killer was his dad. Reminds me of the one you guys did on the Zodiac, which, yeah, we did the Zodiac Palooza episode, which was fun. And Black Dahlia was had some
kind
similarities.
Similarities, yeah. But the thank you, dude. Like, Lee, dude, that's what we try to do. Like, we might not know something. As soon as we find out about it, it's like, oh, shit, let's like get some knowledge about this and read about it.
Yeah, because, I mean, there is quite a bit of that stuff that goes on behind the scenes with Chris and I reading and listening and watching different things about some of these topics, more some than others. If we're busy, you know, it's hard. You know, we both have, you know, day jobs, obviously, and lives outside of here. So, you know, it's hard to kind of work it all in. We love it, but it's a lot of work. So it's cool.
Yeah, it's totally fun, but it is work. And more so for Pete. I love you, Pete.
Billy Joe English Or no, I'm sorry. This is yours, Chris.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, it's Billie Joe English. She says, every podcast you guys do keeps getting better. I really liked watching you guys do the show on YouTube. Will you do more of those? And actually, we actually have a couple going to be coming up very soon.
Yeah, we got the episode 45, the
Gasser, Mad Gasser with Cashman.
With Joey Cashman in here. I finished that today, and so we're that'll be
putting Cashman's entire live set up on YouTube.
Right, with the interview we did with him. And then we're doing a making of the studio video that'll be hopefully here within the next couple weeks. I'm trying to get caught up with the video stuff, but
we literally have real lives. We do this because we like to do it.
Yeah, it's fun, but it is a lot of work. The video stuff especially. The one thing I said I would never do again, I'm doing again.
You're doing it. I know, right? You told me that, too. I'm doing it. You told me that.
When I did the last Low 12 DVD, which was 13 Brutal Years, I said I will never do another video again because it was the fucking worst. It took fucking forever.
Now look where you're at.
It was painful. And yeah, but these are simple. But when you compile them on top of each other,
right,
it's a lot.
Exactly. So yeah. Thank you, Billy Joe.
Yeah, thank you. Rick Spano commented, I like listening to the podcasts, but the only part of them my girlfriend likes are the karaoke songs. So, Pete, thanks, Pete. And at least she'll listen with me knowing that there's always one at the end of each episode. So, thanks. Now, we talked about that when we first started doing this, was that might be a funny way to end, you know, because we're like talking about some pretty gruesome shit.
And we're trying to find some fucking stupid, random, dumb song that's obviously not metal.
Right.
And tie it in there.
Exactly.
And actually, we actually have we've been talking about doing a podcast a bonus episode of us talking about how you started doing this fucking goddamn brutal karaoke and shit. So, like, just to let y'all motherfuckers that are out there listening know.
Yeah, it's actually coming up here in about 3 weeks, that bonus episode. So that should be fun. Don't forget to check out MurderMetalMayhem.com to pick up one of our T-shirts, koozies, or stickers. Also, go to Murder Metal Mayhem, the YouTube channel, and follow us there. Subscribe so you can find out when we post stuff. Also, PeteAltieri.com if you want to pick up one of my books. Also, thanks to our sponsor, Dr. Gein's Vagina Maintenance.
Dr. Gein's Vagina Maintenance.
We appreciate it, Dr. Gein.
Thank you, Dr. Gein.
Yeah, thanks,
keep putting
man.
Them pussies in boxes.
That's right. But we can't let them go. We always, you know, I try. I don't always succeed. But I try to tie it in, though, with the topic of the night, which in this case,
it works William out pretty Hirons, goddamn good.
And he was how old when he got sentenced?
18 when he
and
got
what
sentenced.
And what was his sentence?
Life.
So how could I not do 18? A little Skid Row? Life. So this is fucking my version of it. So until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And keep fucking punching pussy with your hand, bitches.
A young boy, he had a heart of stone. Lived 9 to 5 and he worked a stringer to the bone. Just barely out of school, came from the edge of town. Fought like a switchblade so no one could take him down. No, he had no money, no good at home. Walked the streets a soldier and he fought the world alone. And now it's 18 in life, you got it. 18 in life, you know. Your crime is time and it's 18 in life to go. 18 in life, you got it. 18 in life, you know. Your crime is time and it's 18 in life to go.
ancient healer in his heartbeat. It made for gasoline. It kept his motor running, but it never kept it clean. They say he loved adventure. Rick is the wild one. He married trouble, had a courtship with the gun. Bang, bang, shoot him up. The party never ends. You can't think of dying when the bottle's your best friend. And now it's 18 and life you've got it. 18 and life you know. Your crime is time and it's 18 and life to go. 18 and life you've got it. 18 and life you know. Your crime is time and it's 18 and life to go. Accidents will happen, they all heard Ricochet. He fired a six shot to the wind, and the child full of child away. Time and it's 18 and life to go. 18 and life you've got it. 18 and life you know. Your crime is time and it's 18 and life to go.
Man.